Hello, this is Jill Grunewald, and today we'll be mapping thyroid and low-carb diets on the 15-Minute Matrix.
Welcome to the 15-Minute Matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I'll be talking with my Hashi sister, Jill Grunewald. Jill Grunewald is a functional medicine certified health coach, thyroid health expert, founder and CEO of Healthful Elements, and co-author of the number one best-selling Essential Thyroid Cookbook, which you'll find linked in the show notes. Since 2008, Jill has successfully helped guide her clients and students with Hashimoto's to health and vitality. In recent years, Jill has also focused on alopecia and offers a unique and effective program for hair regrowth. Jill will be speaking to more of the physiology behind why it may not be a good idea for those with Hashimoto's or hypothyroidism to go on a low-carb diet, and specifically why carbs are necessary for the body and how they can support thyroid function. And in the companion to this episode, her co-author, Lisa Markley, will bring us into a different lens of the same issue. Since it's thyroid month, let's get talking about the thyroid. Jill, welcome to the 15-Minute Matrix. I am so excited to have you here with us today.
Thank you.
What I love about what we're doing here is we're going to have a two-part episode about the thyroid and low-carb diets with you and your co-author, Lisa Markley. So that will be awesome. And speaking about your co-author, maybe you can start us out by telling us a little bit about the Essential Thyroid Cookbook and the principles around low-carb diets before we get into some of your concerns with low-carbohydrate diets.
Yes, Lisa Markley and I co-authored the Essential Thyroid Cookbook. We were basically filling a need. There wasn't a Hashimoto's or hypothyroid-specific cookbook. We wanted to provide a resource for that community. We did a lot of really nitty-gritty research on specific thyroid and immune supportive nutrients, because we wanted people to know that it wasn't just another cookbook. You know, we wanted people to, whether they read the educational component or not, that was their prerogative to read it or not read it. We wanted people to know that we had done some really rigorous scientific research around thyroid and immune supportive nutrients, but also foods rich in those nutrients. And that was really the springboard for Lisa's recipes. She took all of that research and ran with it and did her magic and created these amazing, delicious, mouthwatering recipes based on all of that science.
I think it's so important, Jill, what you're talking about with the nutrients that are key for the glandular function, for the body to function, for the immune function. And this is one of the things that I think we all celebrate about Dr. Terry Wall's work, that it really is about making sure we get the appropriate nutrients for the body to function. And it gets so overlooked when we attach ourselves to these presumably therapeutic diets that can be nutrient depleting, and they start to over time introduce those depletions that lead to further symptoms and kind of get us stuck in this pattern.
Yes.
What are low carbohydrate diets that you've seen a lot of people adapting, and where are your concerns sort of on the matrix of how they impact the body?
About 20 years ago, when I started getting into health and food and nutrition, that was about the time that the Atkins diet was popularized. I did the Atkins diet and I felt terrible. Mm. I know that everyone is unique, but a low carb diet doesn't work for me personally. Now, at that time, I didn't know that I would later become a nutrition educator. Fast forward many years, I ended up researching the work of Dr. Barry Sears and other doctors who were more advocates of a moderate carbohydrate diet And then fast forward a few more years, as you know, like the ketogenic diet has become popular. When the paleo diet first became popular, a lot of those proponents were advocating low carb. And I didn't see a lot of difference between Atkins and paleo at that time. Since then, and I'm sure you've seen this too, Andrea, is how a lot of those early proponents of the paleo diet have since softened their views, and they've backpedaled a little bit and said, actually, a low carbohydrate diet isn't a panacea. You know, it isn't the cure for all of our ills, whether it's inflammation or weight loss. I didn't want to exclusively go on my own personal experience. As I've worked with many Hashimoto's clients over the last 11 years, really, several of my clients, I would say more than several of my clients, have said, I've tried low carb and I feel terrible. I can't do it. I know it's what I'm supposed to do. And I say, hold on, it may not be what you're supposed to do. It's, you know, we really have to listen to the body. And I'm not here to say that keto is bad or paleo is bad or AIP is bad. I do think that they can work for a percentage of the population. I don't think that those diets work for everyone. And I have some specific concerns around low carbohydrate intake and thyroid function.
Yeah. And I think what you're saying is so important, Jill, in terms of they work for a percentage of the population. And what I want to add to that is what I see is that they may work for a period of time. And that's in the therapeutic way.
Yes.
That we need to do eliminations before we appropriately do reintroductions. And this often gets lost when clients or patients aren't working with people like you or like me that can help them figure that out. So this really speaks to the bioindividuality of the diet and lifestyle approach. So what about low carbohydrate and thyroid function did you find in your research?
We know that a low carbohydrate diet can lower T3, which is the active form of thyroid hormone, and it can also raise reverse T3, which is, as you know, acts sort of against our thyroid hormone. It can Right. keep us from accessing, you know, you could have adequate T3, but if your reverse T3 is high, your body's not going to benefit from the T3 that's being provided to it. It can also cause a stress response. It can be very stressful for people, both from the standpoint of not wanting to be on a low carbohydrate diet, you know, feeling like they have to white knuckle it, like this is something I have to do versus something that I want to do. So just the stress of being on a restricted diet can be hard on people. Plus, we know that, and everyone's different, so this is going to be a different timeline for different people, but low-carb diets have been shown to lower serotonin, which is our feel-good neurotransmitter. So rough on average, about 2 weeks into a very carb-restricted diet, people can start to feel anxiety, a little bit of depression, and that's about the time that it takes for serotonin to take a dip because of the carb restriction. It can also lead to low GABA, which is also very grounding and centering.
So many phytonutrients too. I was interviewing Dr. Kasia Kynes about Epstein-Barr virus, which can of course be very connected to autoimmune hypothyroidism. And she too was saying, like, we've become a fruit phobic society. And part of that also is related to these low carb diets. We are afraid to eat these foods because they're higher in carbs when they may be very rich in phytonutrients. And with the carbs, I'm assuming also with some of these grains that are rich in our B vitamins that the body needs to thrive. Were there other key nutrients that you found were depleted in a low carb diet, especially for the hypothyroid patient?
The B vitamins is probably my biggest concern, and you beat me to the punch on that one. The B vitamins, but also glutamine. You know, glutamine has been hailed as this miracle gut healer, which it is. You know, a lot of people on an immune modulatory protocol are taking supplemental glutamine. But Dr. Susan Bloom writes in her book about how carb-rich foods are also a good source of glutamine. It may not be a therapeutic source, but nonetheless, it is a source. Antioxidants, prebiotics are also very present in both grains and legumes. So we can talk about the starchy vegetables, we can talk about grains, we can talk about legumes, which are the three most prevalent source of glucose that the body needs. When I was writing the educational component of the book, and I was writing about grains and legumes specifically and the benefits of those foods, I thought, my gosh, you know, I'm going to be laughed out of my circle of colleagues. And then right before the book was getting ready to go to editing, I found out about, I'm sure you know about this book, The Good Gut by Justin and Erica Sonnenberg. And that really blew the lid off of any doubts that I think anybody would have about intense carb restriction. And they talk extensively in that book about the benefits of both grains and legumes and starchy vegetables and how they do give us prebiotics. The fiber in those foods, that's one of my other big concerns about a low-carb diet, is they tend to be low fiber. Yes, we do get fiber from non-starchy vegetables, not, you know, the non-root vegetables, but fiber is such an important part of detoxification, elimination. I have a hard time seeing how people on a ketogenic diet are getting enough fiber, personally.
Yeah, I think you have to be very, very diligent about that happening. And I think there are few people who are able to take their diet on in that way. Again, this leads me back to Terry Wall's work, because I think she's one of the people who does ketogenic appropriately. And I actually think there's few people who can with the follow through. I can really stick to things, but making sure I get all those things in all those ways with a super restricted diet doesn't work for me. I also can't eat a lot of fat. Like, eating that much fat, just if we look from an ancestral perspective, doesn't work with my body and how I feel and the energy I need. And so it really is talking to what we each need through an individual perspective. I'm wondering, Jill, if you and I can share for all the practitioners out there, like, what did you find worked for you? And what was that process so that practitioners can really understand that it may be an area of discovery while acknowledging that a limited diet may lead to deficiencies?
I was diagnosed in early January of 2018, and then I proceeded to do an elimination provocation diet, which is pretty much the same one that I walk my clients through today. This was before paleo became popular, much less AIP, which came a little bit later, you know, the autoimmune paleo diet. So I did a version of the elimination provocation diet, which is almost identical to the one that I share today, and sleuthed out my food sensitivities. I think that's the most important thing with any immune modulatory protocol, is to heal that gut, sleuth out those sensitivities. I was also taking glutamine and collagen gelatin and a good probiotic. It was a really eye-opening experience, and, you know, I dropped those last few pounds, which is not the reason I did it, but I knew that the inflammation in my body was decreasing because I felt so much better. I was sleeping better. I lost those 5 pounds. And by fall of that year, my Hashimoto's was managed. You know, my antibodies were negligible. So I didn't start out with astronomically high antibodies like a lot of people do. And I also, you know, adrenal health is just so symbiotic with thyroid health and immune health. And I had been driving myself all through my 20s and 30s. I mean, I had a great life and, you know, nothing bad was going on, but I was just very driven. And I really had to assess that. I was running on some high cortisol, which we know can inflame the lining of the gut wall. We know that it can inhibit proper thyroid hormone production. So I also had to really take a hard look at my lifestyle and how I had pushed myself for so long and, you know, slow down a little bit. The functional medicine community has been saying for years, you can never isolate the thyroid. You always have to look at adrenal function as well. Because we know that the thyroid is so mineral dependent, I started taking a multi-mineral. I wasn't taking a multivitamin, I was taking a multi-mineral. And a lot of that science that I found way back then ended up in the educational component of our book.
I think it's really important for us all as practitioners to recognize that process. And a lot of people think that what works for us works for our patients or clients. And I think the only place that that's true is when somebody does the work that you just outlined, that it's an investigation of one's own responses to what they're putting in their body. You walked us through the GI, the immune and inflammatory balance, detoxification, hormones and neurotransmitters for sure. Are there any other areas that you see in this central part of the functional nutrition matrix that you want to call out that are impaired when we eat a low carb diet, potentially for too long?
Yes. And this is a big one. And the timing of this interview is really kind of serendipitous because this has come up so much in my private practice lately, is that glucose is such a important fuel source. Yes, fat is a fuel source. Yes, protein is a fuel source. But, you know, there's a reason that athletes carb load. I'm not suggesting that people carb load. I'm not saying that we should be doing that. I am more of a fan of moderate carbohydrate intake versus high carbohydrate intake. For me personally, and for a lot of my clients, I don't have the fuel to work out if I don't have some good carbs in my system. I can get so much more of a satisfying and energetic workout when I do have carbs in my diet. And the other issue that I see with people who are on low carbohydrate diets for weight loss is that they start not sleeping nearly as well. In my recent work with clients, a lot of people have had really incredible sleep issues, just like not getting that deep restorative sleep, sleeping for 2 hours, waking up, sleeping for 2 hours, waking up, having a hard time going to sleep. They've made one simple shift, which is having some root vegetables with their dinner, and all of them have started sleeping through the night. It's not just the addition of the starchy vegetables with dinner, but they are all convinced that it is a big piece of things. And they're also very happy and satisfied and comforted in hearing someone say, it's okay to have these foods.
Thank you, Jill, for sharing some more of your story. We don't often get a chance to do that very much on the 15-Minute Matrix, but I think it's an important story for practitioners to hear and for sharing your research and your wisdom and the work that you do with your clients and identifying that there is no one size fits all and that we want to be careful that we're not too restricted for a number of reasons that have to do with the full body systems. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you, Andrea. It's been a pleasure.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, along with Carla Schaefer, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes at 15minutematrix.com. And if you'd like to be notified each time there's a new podcast episode ready and waiting for you, please go to 15minutematrix.com/notify. And we will be sure to drop into your inbox with a short reminder that a new episode is ready for you. You have an open invitation to email us. I do want to hear from you. How are you enjoying the podcast so far? What is it you'd like to hear more about? You can let us know your thoughts at ask@15minutematrix.com.